Good evening, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I'm pleased to be with you again, and I've got quite an interesting package of articles and messages. And I have to tell you that here in England, we are enjoying our first week of summer, and our temperatures coming up to this weekend, where they're expected to increase, are in the upper 70s. So that may not sound too dramatic, having regard to some of the temperatures you experience in the States. But for us, it's a relief after a very cold and windy spell, which lasted many weeks. Now, as usual, I want to start with Sheldon Neidel's message. And as usual, it's full of interesting comment and information. And he's talking about members of the fleet that are involved in the care of Mother Earth, and he reports that Mother Earth badly needs some important pressure adjustments to many of her tectonic plates. He says, hence, you can expect some major seabed earthquakes in the next few weeks. All this indicates that the present reality is barely remaining in place. And he goes on to say that these rising pressures on all fronts show us that you are indeed very close to this reality's endgame scenario. He says that long ago, talking of our solar system, the system was pristine, and the 12 daughter planets sailed in harmonious, near-perfect orbits around the sun, and the forces and energies acting upon them were carefully allotted. Then the Great Galactic War swept in, and with a series of severe skirmishes, changed our solar system into a scarred remnant of her former self. And he says it is this that led to this system's devolution into a limited consciousness reality. Among the changes were elliptical orbits, the eventual disappearance of her innermost world, and the sudden demise of her outermost water world. And these events caused the turning down of Mother Earth's energies and resulted in the crippled planet that we presently reside on as guests. He goes on to say that an important point for you to grasp is your status as guests. You are not true members of this planetary ecosystem. Rather, you are extraterrestrials drawn from 50 star nations dotted throughout this galactic neighborhood. As such, you each have a special responsibility to take care of and protect this beautiful water world. Mother Earth has done much to ensure your survival in this most dangerous, limited consciousness environment. All she asks in return is that you now make amends for your destructive actions against her. And he says, our part is to aid you by providing, once we arrive in great numbers, the technology and logistics to carry out what is immediately essential. Bear in mind that your deeds of the past 500 years have accelerated massive planet-wide extinction. Further, your misuse of your industrial and petroleum-based inventions have brought great plagues upon you and your fragile environment. These developments help to further speed up the rate of extinctions over the past 100 years. He says your world is becoming more inhospitable to human survival. This you have brought upon yourself. This dilemma came about for a purpose, to show you that you need either to change or die. He's talking then of the governments and saying that embedded in various governments are individuals who are working diligently to muster the resources to carry out the near impossible. This operation makes for a most sensational plot line, but no, it is getting done. Soon the actions to oust these regimes can become concrete history. Until then, realize that many men and women are daily risking their jobs and lives to bring about this victory. Before these coup d'etat hit the headlines, your ongoing focus on your objectives is greatly needed. We repeat, keep the pressure up. Show these regimes you are determined to have their dismissal. Most of all, be forbearing and know heaven is always with you. He goes on to say that the changes within you are likewise accelerating. The integration of your physical and spiritual elements is creating greater sensitivities, and this brings an increase in headaches, back problems, and rising levels of fatigue. As your new head chakras begin to make themselves known, headaches can be more severe at times. Keep in mind that a vast new information system is being restored to you, which brings you back into contact with spiritual realms. Also, several new chakra points are opening along your spine. This changes the way your nervous system works while inadvertently affecting your lower back. Muscle spasms and occasional twinges of pain may result. He goes on to talk about the integration of a new thymus chakra and saying that this was delayed as the procedure can somewhat affect our body's present immune system. And apparently that is being monitored by the Galactic Federation medical teams, and they're following a number of procedures to see that this new chakra comes in as easily as possible. They talk about it also initially causing a temporary increase in fatigue, and that if this happens, they recommend that you take time out to have a nap. And having integrated, your body can then reward you with increased energies to complete your tasks. Now that is what I want to extract from today's message, although there are a few words right in the very end of the message which confirm what we know by now, and they say, I quote, "We stand at the very brink of contact." Now, that's all I have from Sheldon Nidal's message, and I haven't really referred very much to my own messages in the last few weeks. But I have a feeling, and from the content of the messages, that we are, in a manner of speaking, biding our time. It seems that the events we anticipate that will herald the start of the changes, i.e. the removal of the Bush gang, are so near that there isn't really a great deal to say. But I'm pleased to note that most of the messages, whilst giving what I call almost a daily update on what is happening, do include some interesting spiritual observations or teachings. So there is a point to the messages, and I hope it helps people. Now, I'm going on to general news. It's been a strange week in that sense, because usually there is so much floating around from the different internet sites that I'm usually, as they say, spoiled for choice. So this week it seems to be somewhat quiet, but I have a few items here anyway, which I will start with now. And the first one I have is from a report from Truth Out. It was run by Sarah Olson, and it was headed First Officer Public Resisting War Games National Support. And it's talking about 27-year-old US Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watada, who has announced his refusal to deploy to Iraq. And he did that on Wednesday this week. And they say he did so surrounded by veterans, military family members, and members of the religious and anti-war communities. And news of Watada's intent to refuse his orders to deploy to Iraq has galvanized anti-war communities around the country, many of which are already calling for a series of demonstrations in support of Watada's actions. And others, they hope, will be inspired to refuse deployment to Iraq as well. Report says that at a press conference in Tacoma, Washington, Watada announced his view that the war in Iraq is immoral and illegal, and his intent was to refuse to deploy to fight that war. Watada said, "It is my duty as a commissioned officer of the United States Army to speak out against grave injustices. I stand before you today because it is my job to serve and protect soldiers, the American people, and innocent Iraqis with no voice. And Wattada went on to say that his participation in the Iraq war would make him party to grave moral injustice and war crimes. So there you are, there's yet another person who's brave enough to stand up to the authorities and stand up for his own principles. He has commented, I know from another article I read, that he believes they will want to make an example of him, and one has no doubt that will in fact be the case. But out of it, I think his, if you like, sacrifice by standing up and accepting the punishment that he will get will galvanise other people and groups into action. So each of these actions does have a good cause behind it. I now come to an item about AIDS, and this came from The Guardian UK. This was last Friday. An article by Ewan McCaskill, and it was regarding the US blocking international deals on fighting AIDS. And I read that the Bush administration, heavily influenced by the Christian right, is blocking key proposals for a new United Nations package to combat AIDS worldwide over the next 5 years because of its opposition to the distribution of condoms and needle exchanges and references to prostitutes, drug addicts and homosexuals. The United States is being supported by many Muslim countries, including Egypt and various conservative African and Latin American nations. And a European official attending the UN talks in New York last night, which would have been last Thursday, was quoted as saying there are a lot of unholy alliances all over the place. It was reported that fraught negotiations were continuing to try and salvage as much of the package as possible, and that more than 140 nations were attending the UN summit in New York, which began on Wednesday last. And the meeting is intended to update a 2001 declaration that provided the momentum for a worldwide campaign against AIDS. And they were hoping, this was on Friday the 2nd of June, a week ago today, that a new declaration would be agreed. Now, I haven't seen anything since that date, so we don't yet know what the outcome is. Now, Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, told the summit the world has been inconsiderably slow in meeting one of the most vital aspects of the struggle. Measures to fight the spread of AIDS among women and girls. These shortcomings are deadly. A report published on Tuesday week ago, by the agency UNAIDS said that new figures suggest the infection rate is slowing down globally, but new infections are continuing to increase in certain regions and countries. The report adds that an estimated 38.6 million people are living with AIDS virus, HIV for one, and 1 million were newly infected last year, and 2.8 million died of AIDS last year. And treatment with medicines is available to only less than half of those infected with the virus. And finally, I read that of those infected worldwide, almost half, about 17 million, are women, and three quarters of those are in Africa. It's sad to think about the spread of AIDS and its roots in having been made in a US laboratory and allegedly having been put in with vaccinations and spread deliberately in Africa to decimate the population. Doesn't sound possible, does it, that anyone or any people could design something to have such vast effects on life. Terrible. Right, my final bit of general news is quoted from the website warwithoutend.co.uk, and it relates to a former CIA analyst who says that the Iran strike is set for June or July. Now, this was, it was debated on the 6th of June, and it reads that on February the 14th, 2006, Congressman Charles Rangel, who's a Democrat from New York, introduced a bill called the Universal National Service Act of 2006, aimed at drafting everyone, men and women alike, from the ages of 18 to 42, into the military for a minimum period of 2 years. And it says, or to quote the bill, to provide for the common defense by requiring all persons in the United States, including women between the ages of 18 and 42, to perform a period of military service or period of civilian service in furtherance of the national defense and homeland security and for other purposes. And that is it, unquote. The House is to convene on the 6th of June to debate and possibly adopt this bill. That is, unless a vast public outcry succeeds in derailing this insanity, which you can do by writing a letter of protest through your Congress person. And then it gives a series of website addresses and other information so that you can follow that through if you want to add your protest. So, one can't say that George Bush didn't say that he was a war president, but one has to see in this the ulterior motive that the last cabal cannot proceed with their agenda because they haven't enough troops to occupy all of the lands and supply all of the services that they need to maintain it. So one has to think that national service is, as I would call it, the cheap means of obtaining the services of people, in most cases, I'm pretty sure, against their will. But there we are. Let's hope that the people are aware of that bill and they are able to stop it going through. In a time of real war, one could understand the need for it, or immediately after a war, as happened with World War II. But in a time that we're judged to be peace, although where do we find it, I think it's a bit out of order. Anyway, I'm now passing over to my UFO file. I get bits and bobs every now and again, and some of it, as people will know who listen in regularly, come from a whole set of old flying saucer reviews that I occasionally browse through to see what is of interest. And of course, there is no lack of information in there. And I've got quite an interesting one this week. These flying saucer reviews all go back to the 1960s. And that's a long time ago. And you have to say that reports that came in on, say, a monthly or two-monthly basis probably appeared once, and that was, in a lot of cases, the last you ever saw of them or heard of them. And I believe there is one here which is extremely interesting, and it will take me a little while to read it out, but it's that type of report where the person who experienced it has almost written a little story about it, and you can't really clip the ends or any part out of it without perhaps altering the context of it. But this goes back to 1951, and it relates to an Austrian who preferred not to be identified, and an article about his experience appeared in 1957. This appeared in, I think, a paper called The Citizen. Yes, indeed, it is one called The Citizen. Anyway, The story runs as follows, that I'll have to call him this person because I haven't got a name. On May the 15th, 1951, he says he was driving for a Lieutenant Colonel cousin, and he told him to drive from Linz to Salzburg. And he wanted to do that because he was with someone else who was going to teach classes to the United States soldiers in Linz. And he was told to drive him from Salzburg to Linz three times in one particular week. And on one of these days, he said he came back as usual from Linz at about 11 o'clock at night. And he arrived at a motorway north of Salzburg. And when he started for home in a car that he took out of the motor pool, he said, I took a shortcut, and on the left side was brush, and it was dark and with no street lights. And then suddenly, into his headlights, someone came out of the bush and came towards him. And he said, I could only see the outline in the dark, but the person appeared to have a helmet on. And he said he was about my height, but he doesn't say what his height is, so let's assume he's about a standard height, perhaps about 5'10", 11". And he said he had something in his hand, and he pointed it at me, and I thought it was a revolver or something of that nature, and it made a click. And he said, after the click, the being waved his hand quickly, and I went to put up my arm in front of my face, thinking that something was going to hit him, but he said I was paralysed, and I felt like falling down, but I didn't. He then put a black square plate on my chest and strapped it around my back, and I could hear a dog barking in the distance, but I couldn't hear this being walking. He must have walked very easily. I could see his outline as he walked around me. After he strapped the plate on me, he walked in front of me and then pointed the thing in his hand at the plate on my chest rather than at my head like before. He walked away and pulled me after him. I couldn't move or walk, but he just pulled me along after him. I wasn't actually in the air, but my full weight wasn't on the ground either. It seemed as if I was light. Behind the brush was a small field. In the field, hidden from the road, was a round object about 150 feet in diameter. It was dark, and I couldn't tell what it was. My first thought was that a spy had captured me for some reason. He then goes on to say that the thing that led me sort of rose from the ground and took me after him to the top of the object. He did something, either stepped on something or pushed some button, and a door opened, and he pulled me after him and into the dark. I was plenty scared, and I wondered what would happen next. I got down into the dark, and I could finally feel a floor under my feet. I knew that where I was either glass or plastic, because the stars could be seen shining up above. Then I saw the outline of what looked like a door, and he pulled me through it into what I later found was a room of glass or plastic. He kept his finger, or what I thought was his finger, but later saw some form of a pencil-shaped object, pointed at me until I was inside the room. He kept it pointed at me all the time until I was in the room, and then he took it off me and I sank down to the floor. He went out, and then I was in the room by myself, and as he went out, I could see his outline. And then suddenly, there was a sort of shaking sensation, and I knew the door to the room had shut. The next sensation I had was one of rising up into the air. I had never flown in my life. In a few minutes, I could see the left half of the moon shining. I was scared, but I figured I was dreaming. Then I started to feel my hands and feet again. I sat up, and then I got up onto my feet. By this time, we were in the sunlight. I looked across the ship, and I could see the person that had brought me there. He was standing over by the wall, and there were some levers there. He looks like a person like we are, a little bit shorter than me. To me at the time, he looked like the devil. He had no hair at all. I could see through the sort of glass helmet. His head was a sort of cylinder form. A very high forehead with big eyes. You could see lots of little eyes in the two big eyes. It seemed to me it looked like the eyes of a fly. No nose at all, just two holes. He had a very small slit for a mouth. It looked like he had skin. It was sort of white. There were two holes for the ears, and his skull was very large. The torso was round, kind of like a tin can. The legs were of proportionate length. His arms were a little bit shorter than our arms. I would say his hands seemed to be three long fingers. I couldn't see any neck, but he was wearing material that was like silver. It wasn't shiny. This covered all of him except the head part, which had on the helmet. He didn't look at me at all. The main part of the ship that I could see from the room I was in appeared to be round, and the walls were like glass, but you couldn't see through them. The floor was made of glass or plastic. In the middle of the floor, under the glass, was a black plate, something like I had strapped on my chest. From the corners of the plate, which looked to be about 10 feet square, black beams ran to the walls of the ship. I could see under the black plate, and there seemed to be a duplicate room on the other side of the ship. I could see the same kind of levers on the wall as the thing was standing beside me. I could see that as soon as we came into another area, that we were out in the sun, and I could feel burning heat. But he pulled a lever, and a covering like blue water came over the roof. Then the sun was normal, but I could still see through it. My first thought that I was dreaming, and then my second thought was that I was dead, and that my soul was rising up. The ship was not rotating or going sideways, but kind of gliding straight up. I could see the sun like a ball of fire, and the moon was like a silver ball, but the rest was darkness. Suddenly, as I looked up, the moon was right above us, and it seemed to come down at us. Suddenly, we were both standing on what had been the roof. We seemed to be about a quarter of a mile above the moon. I could see clearly the craters on the surface of the moon. There were lots of them. The ground seemed to be a greyish colour, and I could see rocks and hills. We were in the sunny part of the moon. The ship glided to the right and into the darkness. Then the driver stopped the ship. I could feel it sort of waiting. It was dark all around outside, but the sun seemed to shine into the ship. I saw the being take one of those pencil things that he had pointed at me, and he pointed it downwards. I thought at that time that he must be from the moon and that he was signalling someone down below. There was no noise from the ship or from the signal. After that, about 5 minutes, we started to move again to the right. My first thought was that I'm going back to Earth, but I could see the outline of America and Asia, and I could see clouds. The Earth and the moon were going away from me very fast, and I began to think that this was from another planet. Suddenly, another planet seemed to loom up in front of us, and I thought we were going to crash into it. I was sure of this, but the driver suddenly stopped it again, but there was no jerk. I realised then we were still quite away from the planet, and then we started to glide sideways down towards the ground. I looked out over the land, and it looked like paradise. As we went down, I looked and looked, and on one side there were red fields. On the other side there were what looked like grey-green fields. Some places in the fields were what looked like big chimneys rising from the ground. It was bright daylight, and the sun was shining with no clouds in the sky. We were approaching the red fields, and I could see rivers with blue water in them. The rivers ran straight, and at intervals there were bridges built across them, and I could see roads. The bridges were just like our bridges. From high up, I could see no sign of life. Then we glided to a field that was filled with saucers like I was in. There appeared to be hundreds of them. They were of different colours, grey, gold and silver, but there were no black or red ones. The driver stopped the ship about a quarter of a mile above them by just pulling a lever. Then we went straight down until we were about 20 to 30 feet from the ground, and he parked the ship on a higher platform. As we went down, I could see the same kind of people were in them like my driver. When we got on the platform, the driver pulled a lever and the glass slid back, and he went outside. He put the pencil-like thing to his chest and slowly dropped to the ground like a falling leaf. He then started to walk very fast along to the third or fourth saucer. He pointed the pencil at his chest again and sort of jumped up inside the ship. He was inside that ship for about 10 minutes. I could see that the being in the other ship was smaller than the driver of the ship I was on. While he was inside the ship, I looked around at the other saucers and I could see the same type of people. Suddenly, quite a way away, I saw two ships that had people from Earth on them. One ship was sort of dirty looking and there was one man, one woman and two kids in it. In another saucer nearby that was kind of golden, I saw one man and one woman. I was going to wave at them, but I felt scared. I was waiting for them to wave, but they didn't wave. After I saw them, I thought that I would have to stay here with them now. Way off in the distance by the river, I could see things moving. They were dark, but I couldn't tell what they were. Maybe they looked like a herd of beef, but I couldn't tell for sure. Down on the ground, I could see big red flowers growing. They looked something like our sunflowers. There were some green patches between them, but there were the flowers as far as the eye could see. The earth could be seen in patches too, and it was just the same as our earth. I got to thinking that I must be on Mars. I remembered what I had learnt in school about it being red with canals, and it seemed to me that this must be Mars, although I wasn't 100% sure, because I kind of lost location of things when we had left the moon. Then the driver of the ship came back from the other ship. He got back inside and closed the door again. Then we took off the same way we had come. We went up and up into the darkness, and then I could see a moon that looked like a tin ball. We came quite closer, and I could see it was smooth and silvery without any signs of craters on it. I didn't know where we were going then. I thought we might be going further yet. After about 10 minutes, I could see what looked like half our moon, and I realised we were approaching the sunny side of Earth. I was very glad to see that it was Earth, but we came at it with such a terrible speed that I thought for sure we would crash. The driver stopped the ship again when it seemed we hit the atmosphere, and he glided down towards Earth. I seemed to know he was going to take me back to where he found me, but I had the impression that he was going to kill me because he would want to keep it secret. He came into the darkness and then went down to the ground, and I knew we were back at the same place he picked me up. I was really afraid he would kill me. He opened the door and took the small pencil thing and pulled me out the door the same way he had pulled me in. He guided me right back to the road. At that time I could walk, but I was very light and he was just pulling me. He took the pencil from my chest and pointed it at my head. At that moment, a dog started to bark at us from about a quarter of a mile up the road, and it seemed to have startled him, because the pencil thing clicked and nothing happened to me. I knew from the first experience I should be paralysed, so I just pretended to be so that he wouldn't know. He took the plate off my chest and went back to the ship. I stayed that way until I was sure that the saucer had gone off into the distance. Then I ran home. My wife was still up. She saw me all excited. She asked what had happened, and I told her, "Nothing, I'm just sick." I couldn't tell her about the experience, for she would have thought I was completely crazy. I noticed the time when I got home. It was 12:20 a.m. The whole trip had taken about 1 hour. I think when the being pointed the pencil at my head, it was to make me forget what had happened or else to kill me. I don't know which. And he said, "I have never told anyone else about this for two reasons. First, no one would ever believe me, and they would want to lock me up as a crazy man. Second, I'm sure those people on Mars know everything that is happening here. And if I had told people about it before, they would have taken me away again or killed me." And that's it. That was reported in the Flying Saucer Review. In the concluding part, where the people who edit these articles in the Flying Saucer Review came in, there's just one short paragraph I'll read out, and they were commenting on what they called the one really staggering part of the whole story, and that is the mention of a moon that looked like a tin ball, smooth and silvery, without any signs of craters on it. And they said the implication is that this was one of the moons of Mars, either Phobos or Deimos, because apparently a Dr. Arshlovsky only announced his theory that the Martian satellites were artificial, hollow inside and constructed largely of aluminium and magnesium, on May the 1st, 1959. And that announcement was made to the Soviet Academy of Sciences. So there we are. I think that's a very interesting one. I suppose because we haven't got a name of the person, it hasn't become known as a particular case. Shall we say, like you could talk of the George Adamski saucers. So it's very intriguing. And from that time, of course, other people have had experiences of being taken up. And I think what they have said, particularly with regards to the moon, and indeed what we found out from our own satellite excursions around the moon, they seem to prove very much what he said, that one could accept it as a real experience. Right, so that's all I'll take, as that was a long report from my UFO file. I've got one or two smaller ones that I think they can last for a week until we have the next programme. What I'd like to do finally is to come to one or two, I think, very interesting, what I call general messages, which are of a spiritual nature. And there was one that came out on the 18th of March, which was transmitted through Maisha Michelson, and this is the Archangel Michael. Now, I haven't seen anything before through that particular person, but I have to say there are a number of sites or a number of channelers that do receive his messages, so I will read it out as follows. I weep for mankind and the future they are moulding with their lack of understanding and refusal to see what lies ahead. I'm leaving and they do not care or understand the heartache I feel. For yes, we of the higher dimensions feel the pain of the loss of so many who chose to come here and are left behind. I am responsible for they answered my clarion calls over the years and have become enmeshed in the unreal world, forgetting who they are and why they came. As the old spiritual hierarchy is disbanded and replaced, mankind goes on as if their world is so important, giving little or no thought to what is outside of their personal needs. They are unable to break out of their own pain of denial and see the divine plan and the part they agree to play. So you see, a new spiritual hierarchy will be taking over as I gather my light workers together to move on. But be assured that all that are left behind will be loved and cared for. Their success is assured. It is just a matter of free will on how long they take to make their ascensions, returning to the higher dimensions in their own time. The new spiritual hierarchy will be the group in charge of the next life wave or root race for Earth, and their focus will be justice, while ours was compassion. Creation is not stagnant and all life must evolve. This changing the guard, so to speak, is just part of the evolutionary process and nothing to fear. I would like to comment at that point that I think it's very evident that we are certainly with the end times going to learn the lesson of compassion, because we're looking at the last cabal, and we're going to learn of all of the history of Earth and the way it's been manipulated and oppressed, etc., by the dark forces. And at this time, when we're concluding this cycle, we are asked to be compassionate to those dark souls. They still have a spark of light, and one day they will return from the depths of darkness to become great light beings again. So I think anyone that wants to lift up in their consciousness will find that possible within their hearts. But I'm guessing that one of the things that has often come up is the fact that there seems to be a lack of justice in the world. We see so many incidents of things that we consider to be wrong, and let's say unfair. So it's interesting that each time these cycles start, there is a theme or a definite purpose that the cycle covers. Anyway, the report goes on to say that the children cry out from abuse and neglect, and few hear the old wither away in your nursing homes as if all the wisdom and experience they have is of no value. They should be revered and cared for, not cast away like trash. They treat the animal kingdom and plant kingdom with contempt as if these have no value except to fill their bellies, and rape the earth, destroying them piece by piece. These life waves are our younger brothers and sisters in evolution. I am at a loss to know what to do, as I am no longer allowed to help those who do not hear my voice, but I am still very much active with those who call on me and work with me. Each one incarnating on earth has free will, and it is this choice that I cannot interfere with. So be reassured that earth is a grand experiment, all coming to the Father in their own time and way, for that is the gift given by the Creator. No other beings will ever have to suffer as you have. So this experiment has been successful, my children. You have made a difference and are honoured for your sacrifices. You are all heroes in my eyes. Goes on to say that it is a harsh reality we of the spiritual hierarchy are facing, as all of our hopes of mankind are falling quickly away as the new hierarchy replace us one by one. But we too must continue to evolve, as this is the Creator's will for us. They will now care for Earth with love and understanding. So I plead with you, cry out to God for salvation before it is too late for us to help. We wish to take our friends and all the light workers who have been here for billions of years while the Earth was formed and developed with us. We of the old hierarchy bend the knee now to the Creator and are preparing to leave Earth. Will you join us on our next adventure? And he finally says, ask me and I will pray with you for the rescue of those caught in the third and fourth dimensional realities so that we can move forward. I would like to comment there at one point that's come out talking about the light workers who have been here for billions of years while the Earth was formed and developed. Wow, I've never realised it happened over such a long period of time. And perhaps it's fortunate in a way that we don't have some deep memory of all the times we've been on the Earth and all of our experiences. I'm believing that it's perhaps too much to carry with you. Right. An email that I received on a report by Mark Stern. It came from an Earth Ascension news update on the 4th of June. It's only a short extract, but he's saying that today, meaning, I believe, let me see, where's the date here? Yes, last Thursday. Oh, I beg your pardon. I think today, in that case, was on Monday, and saying that up to this Thursday, there would be a colossal shift in the activity of the entire planet's sacred and power spaces as the new Earth filters in through these power spaces, as well as the Earth's many crystal cities. A new empire is being laid down in the seventh dimension that has overlays in all dimensions. This celestial empire is known as Idon. It is home for all crystal, indigo, and star children. The Star Children will travel to Idon once it is complete and rest, relax, enjoy their just rewards, and prepare for our move to the new planet. The actual new Earth is filtering into our Earth as a series of holographic overlays. These are subtle, but carry very definite winds of change. I included that because I think it confirms what we've been told for some time now, is that the new Earth already exists in the higher dimensions, and as we increase the light quotient upon the Earth, we are actually drawing closer to it and it to us, and hence at some time in the very near future there will suddenly be a switch, and those of us who are ready will find ourselves on the new Earth. That is how it appears to be. Now, there's another message that was circulated that came from Karen Carbo, who does an excellent job collecting channeled material and sending it out under the name of Just Channelings. I get the impression that by and large these are people that don't have their own website and are therefore unable to find another outlet for their messages. Now, this particular one happens to come from the Sedona Journal of Emergence, and this was the May 2006 issue. And if you're not already aware, you can go to the website, sedonajournal.com. And I've read a lot of the old ones, and they're very, very interesting, very good stuff, as you might say. And on this occasion, the message that was sent out was from Monkar Kada through Commander Alien. And he's saying that at one time on your planet, there were beings who lived to be hundreds of years old and never appeared old. This was a time when your planet was an unfallen orb of great love and understanding. When your planet started to lower in vibration, the process of what you call aging became rapid for many. Instead of living hundreds of Earth years, many started to live only to somewhere in their 60s, although some lived through to their 90s. Instead of living to be 500 years old and looking young, they became old within and without. This was due to their disconnection from God and to the battles that caused your planet to be separated from the planetary and galactic levels of spiritual understanding and peace. In time, Earth society forgot its origins and became its own power, which caused many problems and conflicts to arise. The aging process over time created sickness and other diseases on your world. The truth is that aging is an illusion, and when you buy into the idea that, quote, I'm not even 60 years old, but I'll be here for only a few more years, unquote, that's a belief system programmed into your mind. When you reside in your true form, you will look radiant and beautiful. Many of you are hundreds of years old, and unlike on Earth, you look to be in your 20s and 30s. The process of aging is a state of mind. When you are born, you have no concept of aging until your first birthday. And even then, the idea that you are aging does not exist, except for the fact that your parents remind you it's your birthday. From a cosmic understanding of birthday, what this means is, in truth, you expand your consciousness and birth yourself into a higher state of understanding. The reality is that this happens for some, whereas for others, the candles get blown out. If you start to tell yourself, from an early age in human years, that you will not age and do this as a daily exercise, like going down to the gym and doing your yoga and meditation within time, you will experience a change in your human body. Your belief in aging has caused you to have this process affect your health and well-being. When you leave the body behind, your being is much younger within the higher dimensions and within the home worlds that you came to Earth from. Then there's a second part to the message, which is related to nuclear weapons, power and devices. And this is still from Monkar Kada, who now tells you that he is of the Saturian Spiritual Council of the Ashtar Command. This is also, I find, very interesting. He says that the nations who have uranium and use this to build weapons, power plants, and other devices of mass destruction are heading on a course that is against the universal laws that many planetary systems live by. The leaders of these countries are operating from massive ego, which does not care about the outcome as long as the power resides with it. Although many have this power now, they have forgotten that which created them on Earth. When there was a lack of love for each person and a desire for control of Earth's resources without care for your Mother Earth, this presents a problem. Humans have become extremely powerful with their current abilities to create technologies that could be used for good or for destruction. There is always a choice to be made. When nations tell other nations not to build nuclear plants and yet they themselves create nuclear bombs, power plants and other nuclear devices that are dangerous to the existence of humanity, then it's time for those with great power who are abusing their planet to step down. Oh, excuse me there, I had to have a... had to clear my throat. Right, to carry on. You are now going to see many things being played out within world governments. There will be many diversions coming up before your eyes. Be aware of these things as they develop. And then in a further part of the message, under a heading called A Great Cosmic Cleansing, he says that a great karma is being lifted for many in this 2006 to 2007 area of time and space. Words are now very powerful, and how one uses his or her words will have a great effect on others. If you speak with angry words or ones that instill fear in another, then that's what will become of that reality for that person. When leaders of nations use words against each other, it can and will create an outcome. If you speak in a vibration of love within your words, then that will be felt by another. It's time for the outcome of these words to be heaven on earth. Peace to all, and a new cosmic way of living among the people of planet Earth. May those who read these words walk in balance, walk with a big heart, and speak with a great love for all beings. In the end, may those who are spoken to understand the message of the Ashtar command and that of our divine plan. And that is a message that comes through Commander Alion. And if you're interested in the date, that was subject of an email that I received on the 26th of May. So I guess it came out shortly before that. The actual date as such is not mentioned. So that's a very current message dealing with topical matters, which a lot of the messages seem to do these days. Unlike, I think, many years ago, perhaps 30, 40, 50 years, most of the messages coming through were based largely on spiritual concepts and spiritual teaching. But I think it's clear that because of the important times we're now in, they do tend to talk about this specific period and the few years left to ascension. Now, there's also a message, goes back a little while now, came out in March when I saw it. It was a message channeled through Jani King of the website pitah.com, that's P-T-A-A-H, and the message was Pitah Speaks, and talking about the transition of 2012-2013. He said that each of you has chosen to come forth in this timing, in this incarnation, to take part in this grand end cycle. You have chosen this for the adventure and for self-realization. 2012 is not long to go, and this transformation is occurring now. Every time you are in the excitement of the idea of this transformation, so you are assisting yourself in the ease and flow. It is not about struggle. It is not about trying to be spiritual, and it is not about trying to be good. You are spiritual, and you are goodness. What is that? What is goodness? You are perfection now, glorious, powerful, perfect creatures unto infinity. You are your perfection. This transition, if you allow it to be, will be a soft and gentle ease, a flow. It is about love, and that which is your enlightenment is the natural result of loving who you are absolutely and unconditionally. There's nothing to do but to be in that place and love. When it is not thusly, stop and deal with what is occurring, with the feeling to create the transformation, the transition, that is who you are. And we say, even if there were to be no end time and beginning time, still you are always in the place of transition. Transition is a natural state. That which is termed God, goddess, all that is a constant flow called transition, called transformation, called change, called expansion. That is your natural state of being. You are creatures of love, created of love, for love, in love eternally. Love is your perfection, there is nothing else. And so you may say that the transition is only about realizing your natural state. There are also, of course, many questions. What will occur after the transition? That is what you all want to know. And the more you know, the less you want to be here. We know. Well, you want to know how it is to be in that place of expanded consciousness, to be in that place of knowing the truth of you. What do you think it might be like to be in bliss? To be in bliss more and more each day. To be in love. To be in love with you and to be absolutely in love with everything and everybody in the recognition of the God light of all things. How does it feel? Well, it will be that when you perceive things exterior to you, you perceive that which is the God light, the light sourceness. In that state of being, you are lighter. You are less dense in your physicality. You will have a physical body. It will simply be less dense. Your perceived reality, exterior to you, will be less dense. The power of you will be realized to manipulate matter at a consciousness which most of you do not have in this now. Of course you manipulate matter in this now, else you would have no reality. But most of you do not know how to do it. You will, in this place of love and loving, come to the realization that the thought embraced by the emotion, term love, immediately creates coalesced energy into physical matter. Also, you will have the ability to manipulate your own physical matter, termed your body. So there will be much fun and games. You are learning this already. You are starting to feel this power of manipulation of matter, or physical matter. As you learn to heal your bodies, as you learn how it is that your emotion, that energetic power sourceness of you, creates your beingness, your physicality. So, if you desire change, you will know how in the power of love. You also have the knowing to use sound and colour to assist you in this changement. You're learning it now. In this change, you're recognising your own power. Many of you become quite terrified at the thought of this boundless power that you are. However, we say to you, look at your life in this now and look back a few years and see how you have already come forth in that place of expansion. See how much you have learned. You see it has been quite imperceptible in that time and has passed, and you are now in this moment quite comfortable with that expansion. And so it shall be the more and more. But it is for you to be in the ease and flow, so that it certainly is not what you would term a great shock. It is not as if you would wake up one day and there is a stranger with unlimited power looking at you from the mirror. No, it will be gentle, soft, exciting, adventurous, joyous and wondrous beyond measure. In a way, it is difficult for us to use just words to describe that which does not fit into the limited boxes of your conscious understanding. Of course, we say the words to keep you and your mind busy, but really it is that which is in the emotion. It is the grandeur of love that touches you, so that rather than an intellectual understanding, it becomes a knowing of the heart, a feeling about this change, this transition. And that's it, my dear friends. My time is almost up, so I would bid you goodbye. Thank you for being with me, and I hope you enjoyed the material that I selected. And in going, I will say, God bless you all. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.